This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, in honor of the 2-year anniversary of the death of music legend Prince, we're going to take a look at the drug blamed for his overdose, fentanyl. We'll find out what it is, why it's on the streets, and why so many people are unable to manage the dosage of this particular drug. But first, mental health first aid training teaches everyday people to assist someone who might be having a mental health or substance abuse crisis. Just like CPR training teaches you to assist someone having a heart attack, this teaches people risk factors, warning signs for mental health and addiction concerns, and gives concrete strategies for helping someone in both crisis and non-crisis situations, and how to get professional help. On today's show, we're going to learn more about mental health first aid, in this case specifically aimed at professionals who work with young people like teachers, coaches, or youth leaders. We're joined by Richard Keelan. He's a mental health counselor and child advocate for Lee Health. He'll be conducting a mental health first aid training session aimed at people who work with kids this Thursday at the Healthy Life Center at the Wellness Center in Cape Coral. Richard, thanks for coming in today. We really appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me in.
We're talking about mental health first aid on this part of today's show. Are you familiar with this concept? Have you received this kind of training? Or maybe it's new to you and you have questions. Give us a call right now at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. So most people are familiar with first aid training like CPR, but maybe not mental health first aid training. How long has this concept been around and taught?
It started in Australia approximately 10 to 15 years ago. Youth mental health first aid in the United States started in 2012. It is in all 50 states, and unfortunately, I would say Florida is kind of low on the list for the penetration of how many people are trained, but we're working hard to change that.
Yeah. So you're going to be teaching a session that's mainly aimed at people who work with young kids, but how much difference is there between this kind of a session and one that's not aimed at young people?
Adolescents are different. Their development of mental health issues looks very different. And also, frankly, it's sometimes hard to sort out what's a normal adolescent between what's an adolescent with an emerging mental health challenge or mental illness. So we do spend a fair amount in the training going over very specific scenarios about the differences between those and what a typical adolescent development would look like and what a mental health challenge could be. So we really try to help them differentiate.
An adolescent would present with something like depression, perhaps, differently than maybe an adult.
Right. I mean, an example of a depressive symptom that might be different for a normal adolescent would be that they would withdraw from their parents. But an adolescent with a mental health challenge like depression would withdraw from their parents and their social network, which is very different. So they would have that additional withdrawing from their friends as well.
Yeah, the friends are pretty critical at that time.
Exactly. And so if you see something like that in an adolescent, it should be a warning sign.
So who is this training for primarily?
This training is really, I work at Golisano Children's, and this training is really for folks who work with youth. If you could be a neighbor, it doesn't have to necessarily work with youth. You could be a parent of adolescents. You could have adolescents in your neighborhood. You could be a youth group advisor in a faith community. You could be, a Cub Scouts, mm-hmm. Boy Scouts coach, Little League, whatever. As long as you're spending time with any children from ages 10 to 18, this course is essential. This really gives you tools to be able to handle situations that you might miss, and we really would love that early intervention and get those kids the support and the help they need. Early intervention is much better and much more effective.
Yeah. I was wondering, are parents able to go to any of these kinds of courses, or is there a different kind of course for parents?
No, this course is for parents as well. They are more than welcome.
Yeah, I mean, professionals will encounter more children in the course of a day than any individual parent probably will.
Right. And I will say right now, most of people registering for the course are mostly folks in the social service community and or the public school systems. But, yeah, it is open to parents. And I think if you're, you have kids coming up on that 10-year or coming up for adolescence, this would help you. This is definitely something you would do. Just as if you're having we and our department also teach pediatric CPR to new parents and pregnant moms. It's just preventative work any good parent can do.
Yes, it's such a great – is it expensive? How much does it cost to attend one of these classes?
Well, the Lee Health Foundation is subsidizing us. They actually, our child advocacy department, which is all prevention, is fully funded through the foundation. And so we are doing it at cost. We are charging $25, which is just cost of materials. If you estimate staff time, because I'm doing a lot of prep work for this, mental health first aid, the national organization estimates the cost per person is $150.
So you get that for $25?
You get that for $25.
So how does someone become certified? You said that you're doing a lot of work.
They take the 8-hour course. You take the 8-hour course and you do get a 2-year certification.
You took an 8-hour course? I thought you
took a... I'm saying a mental health first aider gets certified. They actually will get a certification that lasts for 2 years.
But as a person to teach this to others.
The person to teach it is my own background. I have a master's in mental health counseling. I've worked with kids and I'm also a parent of 2 kids with disabilities, who lives with schizophrenia. So this is a personal mission for me as well.
Yeah.
But it is a week-long course, very intense. Typically, the days were 10 to 12 hours for 5 days. It's an intense course, but well worth it because it's clear. Speaking as a clinician, there's a real evidence base that it works. Mm-hmm. It's effective. It can really help prevention and also really good at destigmatizing things like intervening when somebody's suicidal, which is really important.
It is critical. With young people in mental illness conducting violent acts, kind of making the news so much these days, would this training be seen as maybe an attempt to get ahead of that, to teach people to step in early before things get out of control and violence is inflicted upon others?
Yes. I mean, absolutely. This is to try to get that early intervention. But I would also need to say that people with mental health issues, in particular people with chronic mental illness, are much more likely to be victims of violent crime than they are actually perpetrators. And they're always much more likely to hurt themselves than someone else. So that's just the statistics. They're much more victimized. If you think right now the statistics in the United States is 1 out of 5 people in the United States are struggling with a mental health issue right now. That's 20% of the population. If you think 20% of our young folks are struggling with a mental health issue, that's a very small percentage of folks that are actually acting out violently.
It's kind of the myopic view of the news, you know, just getting focusing in on this happened with this kid and here's why and here's us. So then people assume that that's going to be how anybody with a mental illness will act. But that's not true.
That's not true.
In fact, the opposite is really true.
Absolutely. And they're bullied in schools and victimized in schools quite a bit.
Yeah.
I can't say early intervention is great. That's why we do this. This is really would be that primary treatment level of trying to really get at folks before what could be an emerging – you can head off emerging mental health issues and make it help that person head it off at the pass.
There's a quote from a police officer on the website mentalhealthfirstaid.org, and I thought it kind of crystallizes the training. He said, quote, "Mental health first aid training has taught me to ask people what's wrong with you."
Yeah.
Is that kind of a good starting point?
That's a good starting point in that you're shifting away from blaming the person and instead trying to understand the circumstances they're going through. And that's a much better approach. One of the fundamental things is about stigma and listening to folks non-judgmentally so they can actually open up to you. What's wrong with you is not really a healthy way to open a conversation.
Yeah. It makes you – obviously something's wrong with you.
Yeah. And it makes you defensive. It makes you feel blamed. And you shut down. You're not going to be communicating.
Exactly.
And mental health first aid really helps folks open up those doors and those conversations with youth. And it helps people understand those conversations are crucial and really are important about protecting our kids.
I'm joined this hour by Richard Keelan. He's a mental health counselor and child advocate at Lee Health. He's going to be conducting a mental health first aid training session this Thursday, and it's aimed at people who work with young people between the ages of 10 and 18. If you'd like to join our conversation with a question or comment, give us a call now. The number is 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So I want to talk to you a little bit about the training session. Where do you start? People walk in the door in the morning. Where do you begin?
We actually start with a quiz around perceptions of mental illness so that folks can give and hopefully we would do a post-test at the end that's going to change some of those perceptions because we really want to see what kind of bias is in the room, and people walk in with a sense of stigma. We also walk in trying to attack when they come in, attacking some of those words like psycho and crazy and all those labels that really demean folks who have legitimate illness, and that we need to help and not blame.
Mm-hmm. So, well, you know, teenagers, and we talked about it a little bit earlier, they can be, shall we say, moody,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, they can.
Even on their best days.
Yeah.
How can you sort out the differences between what can sometimes just be a teenager being a teenager and then one who's maybe experiencing a mental health crisis or is about to?
Well, and as I said, we do actually have a specific exercise where we have the room help sort symptoms, and we have a list of symptoms of adolescence and combined and mixed in with symptoms of emerging mental health issues. And so that they we teach them how to differentiate between the two and go through them.
Because I'm thinking back to how I acted when I was a teenager in high school. My parents, if they knew this, they probably might have been concerned about me because I spent a lot of time in my room trying to tape record the radio.
And absolutely. And that's why in the course, and that's one of the – and I would say one of the major differences in the youth program as opposed to the adult program is we spend so much time trying to help them understand what's normal adolescent development. And but I will tell you, a real mental health crisis does not look like normal adolescent development. It is different. And it's not just a matter of degree, it's a matter of some of the symptoms. You know, you're not going to a panic attack where the person is frozen and almost looks like they're having a heart attack. That's not normal adolescent development. Or somebody here, an emerging psychosis where they're hearing things or seeing things that aren't there. That's not typical adolescence. Neurovegetative symptoms of depression where they can't move or they're unable to function. And it's all about functioning. I think one of the things, the misnomers about mental health issues is people don't understand it's really about functioning. You know, you commonly get the person that says, oh, I have OCD because I'm a perfectionist. Well, no, you have OCD if you can't get out of the house because you have to open and close the door 100 times. It's about how it affects your life. It's not just about symptoms. So we really do talk about, is it affecting their ability to go to school? Live, laugh, and love is what we talk about in mental health first aid. Is it affecting the quality of life to the point where they're not functioning?
And I'm wondering if adolescence has changed very much because, you know, my adolescence may not look like today's youth's adolescence. And I'm wondering if there are things that have been introduced with kids today that maybe being older might make adolescence appear differently than from when I was a kid.
With thinking about that, my own experience clinically, having worked with kids for over 25 years, is that I think it's some of the challenges we used to think of in high school have moved to middle school. So I think that the sex, drugs, and rock and roll stuff that we used to identify as a high school thing is really a middle school. And so that this program goes down to 10 years old. There's a lot of risk factors that seem to have been pushed down and happening earlier. So I would say that may be a difference between eras or between our youth and what's going on these days.
Yeah, I'm starting to feel sometimes like I just don't understand anything. Is it because as a function of being older or just that things have changed that much?
It could be both.
Well, we do have a phone call coming in from Dana in Cape Coral. Dana, what would you like to talk about?
I just, as a parent of a child who suffered from nearly crippling depression all through high school, I just would stress how much I would love to the better understanding among teachers because some of the things that they did or said actually made things worse. You know, they were likely to call a problem she was having with the assignment senioritis or that she was not paying attention, and it was just nothing like that. And I just really hope that this filters into the schools as well.
Yeah, and you were telling me, Richard, that you're going to be working with some schools, right?
Yeah, I have a number of schools lining up training specific for their schools. It's a few charter schools and some private schools. And currently enrolled in the course, over half the folks enrolled are in public school personnel. And I would also reach out parent to parent. I'm a parent of two kids with disabilities, and I hear your pain there. I'm also teaching a course on how to parent kids with developmental but also mental health differences. So it's really Lee Health, we're really trying to improve the behavioral health system here in Southwest Florida. And this is one of my coming into our department around prevention is really specifically around these things.
So Dana, there's some good news. Does that answer your question a little?
Yes. Great to hear.
All right. Thanks, Dana, for your call. I really appreciate it. So, yeah, what she was saying is that teachers may not recognize things, but also even parents may have a hard time recognizing exactly what is the best way to communicate with a child or an adolescent that's having difficulties.
Yes, it's true. It's absolutely true. And I would think – and I would almost – mental health first aid is really good for parents if you suspect and or you're not sure and you're trying to do it ahead of time, and I think any parent can take it. I would almost steer if you have a – you know your child is really struggling with issues, I would steer you towards my Parenting the Exceptional Child program because that's much more in-depth. It's 8 weeks, two-hour sessions. It's 16 hours with homework over time. It's also evidence-based. It's part of the Nurturing Parenting program. But it's much more thorough.
Uh-huh. So with the mental health first aid, there are 5 steps apparently in the action plan?
Yes. You have and I'll throw it out there because it's easy to do, and that's what it's called, ALGI, which –
ALGI.
They came up with an acronym for it. But
that's fitting
for
our region.
And it's the name of a little koala bear that is also the mascot for the program.
Is he green?
No, he's not green.
Okay.
But it's assess for risk of suicide or harm because you're always looking for safety first. And that's listen non-judgmentally. And we do a lot of exercises around how to practice that because, as I've said, that's crucial. Give reassurance and information. Encourage appropriate professional help. And then encourage self-help and other support strategies. I mean, I think the definition of mental health first aid is crucial because it's the help offered to the young person experiencing a mental health challenge or mental disorder or mental health crisis. The first aid is given until appropriate help is received or until the crisis resolves. I also teach CPR. It's the same thing. You know, either the person's going to get better or you're going to get them in a place where the professionals are coming into support. People shouldn't overestimate what mental health first aid is. You're not a clinician. You're going to walk in, but you're also going to be able to walk out with that, be able to make that 5-point plan. It gives you enough information so that you can really what do you do? You can come up with a what do you do plan. The book actually is updated every 2 years, and you keep it. And it's a great reference material. You can't cover all of mental health issues in an 8-hour training.
Exactly.
But the book, we refer through it throughout the training so that people know if they're, you know, that's really troubling. Maybe I'm going to look up that symptom and see what it might be related to. Mm-hmm. And they can use the book as a reference.
Yeah, it's kind of like looking up, you know, numbness in my left arm. What,
exactly.
What could that possibly be?
Absolutely. And it's the nice thing is it's vetted. It's been it's research-based. It's not something, you're not going to look in the internet
and
get some misinformation. Yeah. This is mm-hmm. good, reliable information.
Yeah, this is the stuff. It's real news, right?
Yeah, real news. Yes, that's a nice way to put it.
We got a phone call from Jamie in Sarasota. He wanted to ask a little bit more about specific kinds of mental illness this training can help people uncover or help identify. What types of mental illness are we?
It covers the full range from mood disorders to thought disorders. There's not anything left out per se. It also even very specifically how to intervene in a panic attack. It covers the full range of mental health issues, and that's why that, as I said, the reference book is so important because you can't go in depth on everything. Mm-hmm. But it covers the full range. It also covers substance abuse issues as well.
So what is your best advice for someone who's hearing this show today who thinks that may have someone or maybe a kid or even an adult who is experiencing or on the verge of experiencing a mental health crisis? What's the best thing to do? Should you bring it up, ask them about it?
They should assess for risk or harm first. It's always about safety. And then they might want to be absolutely bring it up. You shouldn't ignore the issue. That's not helpful.
But it seems to be more polite, though. You know, a lot of people may not want to.
It may feel
like. I don't
want
to pry, but
yeah,
you seem.
It may feel like the easy path, but in some ways it's going to make things more difficult over the long haul. There's Kevin Hines is a national speaker who's associated with mental health first aid. And in the training, you see some videos of him. And he makes such an emotion. He had a history of he jumped off the Golden Gate Bridge and survived. But talks about really powerfully about, I really wish somebody had not ignored me when I was going through those issues. I really wish somebody had reached out. And I got to tell you, he does it in a way that's really powerful. So it is, yeah, you got to reach out, even if you need to keep plugging away at that. And understand that maybe it's not you. Maybe connect them with a professional, or connect them with a pastor, or connect them with somebody, any trusted adult. We talk a lot in the course about how much a trusted adult can make – that makes a huge difference in an adolescent's life. Don't make it about your ego as a parent. If they can connect with the neighbor next door, great. Let them do that.
Mm-hmm. So this Thursday's training is fully booked?
Yes. I do have openings on Saturday, which is at Coconut Point.
Okay. So you have openings –
the Healthy Life Center at Coconut Point.
Great. So you have openings on Saturday. Are there more of these planned down the road?
Depending on demand, we're planning on scheduling either monthly or every other month. Right now, I did book one at the Children's Hospital on June 14th.
Okay. And so how do people find out more about this if they're looking for information about this? LeeHealth.org?
LeeHealth.org. And if right now you would go into the women's and children's training, because we're under Golisano, and we have a whole bunch of trainings listed there, and one of them is mental health first aid.
But that's open to more than just women and children, right?
Correct. I know. We're actually working on the website to get it in a more appropriate spot. But yes, dads are more than welcome, since I'm a dad and I teach it. Absolutely.
All right. Great. And also all the – yeah, great. So, well, that's all the time that we have for this part of the show today. I want to thank you so much, Richard Keelan, mental health counselor and child advocate with Lee Health. Thanks for being part of the show and telling us about mental health first aid.
Thanks for having me, and it's great to get the story out.
I really appreciate it. We're going to take a quick break, but when we return, fentanyl is a drug few had heard of until recently. We'll find out more about what this opioid is and why it's so deadly. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.